Taylor Decker's on my all 22 fantasy team. Stop. They don't care.
So the strategic component to this game is through the roof.
Your predictions, right? Your forecasting in fantasy football into how good is this player?
This is going to, it's going to change the industry.
Yeah. I moved to the old town where it goes down. Look at me now. I wrote my goals down. I hold it down. Made myself proud. Say, look at me now.
What's up, everyone? Welcome into the All 22 NFL podcast, the official podcast of the All 22 fantasy football platform. It's the only fantasy football game with full 53-man rosters, including offensive linemen, where you get to choose personnel packages and have access to PFF grading and advanced stats to make decisions each week. To learn more and sign up, go to all-22.com. Ray, I think this is the first time we've ever been live, man. This is going to be a new experience for us. So I think I'm going to need some help from you for the people out there listening in right now. If you want to drop a comment, we will be on the lookout for it. That's, Ray, what I'm tasking you with.
Oh, so, okay, great.
You know, every once in a while, just like, you know, put a hand up, be like, we got one and we'll talk about it, right? But it's been a really difficult road for injuries. We talked about that. And this week, maybe the most devastating injury to an NFL team, but to also to all of your all 22 teams that had this player. But Aiden Hutchinson going down is such a blow to the Detroit Lions, but also to all those fantasy managers out there that were really just kind of riding the high that was Aiden Hutchinson. We were talking about it earlier this week or earlier last week before the injury happened, how this is a guy that could have been in that conversation for the sack record at the end of the year, right? And I know sacks are a statistical measurement and we're all 22, right? We see more than that, but it is still impressive in its own right. He was having such an incredible season. What does this mean loss to all 22 managers?
Yeah, it's brutal. The overarching question all year that was answered by now was, is Aiden Hutchinson a superstar? And he proved himself to be a superstar. One of the top handful, four or five edge rushers in the league, and he cemented himself in that status. He was winning you your weeks in all 22, putting on crazy impressive performances, and the play that he got hurt on was another just immediate pressure and great rush by him, which is just fitting for the type of player he is. But it's a really devastating injury. That's ugly. We've seen it, you know, a few times throughout the years and in sports to that degree. So, you hope for a full recovery and, a 100% return next season. But it's a huge blow for the Lions. It's likely a huge blow for your all 22 teams as well. And it's not one that you can just replace by going out and trading for another player at the position. Sure, perhaps there are some names out there that you can get in the trade market that are quality players, but unless, and I guess this is the only possible name that kind of fits into that bucket, unless Detroit goes and gets a Max Crosby, you are, you know, suffering a significant downgrade at that spot, which is the most important spot on that defense. For the Lions, it's a huge loss unless they can, you know, recover with a Max Crosby trade of some sort. And then for your all 22 teams, you're likely not going to find anybody on waivers or anything. You got to make a trade if you're a contender and you really need to shore up that spot for the remainder of the year. That's the only route you can go to actually solidify your top edge rusher spot.
People watching us, if you can, in the chat, drop the player that you're looking for, right? If Aiden Hutchinson was on your team, he goes down, who would be the player that you would go out and get? I think there are a few names, right? I think Joey Bosa is one. We talk about TJ Watt, right? Some of the older edge rushers that are still performing at that high level. Those are the guys, really, that are the only players, potentially, that you can get that can be somewhat of a replacement for you for Aiden Hutchinson that won't cost you the farm, right? Because the only players in the NFL right now at edge that are young enough and playing at that level is, you know, maybe Nick Bosa and Micah Parsons. And, you know, you take a slight step down with Will Anderson, right? Like there aren't that many. We're talking about a guy this year, right? 94.9 defensive grade, 95 pass rushing grade, 8 sacks already, 29 hurries. Like, this is an elite level talent. This is what he was doing this year. It really is a hard blow, but thank God he's only 24 years old. So there will be some chance of a bounce back for Hutchinson. If not this year, hopefully, you know, he's back early next year and he's up and running. There was also two massive trades this week at the receiver position. First, Davante Adams goes from the Raiders to the Jets to pair up again with Aaron Rodgers. I think this means more to Aaron Rodgers than it does anyone else. I think, you know, the year Rodgers was having was a bit up and down. There were moments where you just saw him shine, that classic Rodgers throwing motion. It's all still there, right? A little bit of mobility issues, right? He's getting older. We all expected that. But nobody was really getting open the way that Rodgers is used to with a Davante Adams. Garrett Wilson is trying his best, but when your next best guy is Alan Lazard, it's tough. Yes, the running backs are good. Yes, the offensive line is slightly better than it was last year, but it really was missing that true separator on the outside to pair with Garrett Wilson. So I think that's a perfect fit. I don't think a second was too much to give either. But tell me what you think, Ray, and what does this mean for, you know, the teams out there that had Adams, had Rodgers, who benefits the most?
Yeah, that's a synergy right there to unite those two again. It's the old cliche, oh, you know, get the band back together. They can draw up secret plays with each other and kind of, you know, go out in the dark, close their eyes and run routes and still complete 60% of their reps. But yeah, the Jets, for all the talent that they kind of had come together, and it wasn't the deepest of talent at receiver. We've always been cautious. I won't even say cautiously optimistic, because I think we just weren't optimistic when it comes to the Mike Williams addition in New York, because just with his injury history and what he's had to deal with, we weren't sure we were ever going to see prime Mike Williams again. So they had a hole beyond Garrett Wilson at wide receiver. Obviously, what better replacement could you have with better chemistry with Aaron Rodgers than Davante Adams? And Davante Adams is someone who can get open immediately off the line. He can get open quickly. So you look at a relatively big bodied 30 plus year old receiver, and you don't think that's the case, but his release packages are just top notch, you know, up there with the other name we're probably going to talk about in a couple minutes at wide receiver in the league. So that chemistry is immediate. It's not like other midseason wide receiver trades in the NFL. They're going to hit the ground running. I think it's going to open things up for Garrett Wilson too. So it really is one of those, it's better for everybody type of situations. Even if maybe there's a slight dip in targets for Garrett Wilson, the quality of those targets is going to be better. He's not going to be the focal point of defensive attention, or as much of a focal point of defensive attention, because he still is Garrett Wilson. So I think it's better for everybody. I think it's a win-win-win all around. And the Jets were missing that. Even with Garrett Wilson, Aaron Rodgers and him, you saw those spurts where they just weren't quite on the same page just yet. There were a few misfires there, and they just weren't in sync just yet, which is natural. Young receiver, veteran quarterback who had no time last year with him because of his injury. So yeah, it was going to take time, but now, even if it does take a bit of time for them to really hit their stride, you have Davante Adams, who is already in lockstep with Aaron Rodgers. So it's a benefit all around for everyone involved, including the backs. It's going to open the box up even more for them. So yeah, I think it's a no-brainer. Just everybody wins for the Jets, and I know that's a boring answer, but it's the truth.
And everybody out there, just remember, in all 22, right, it's not about targets and receptions. It's about every play. How you play on every play, right? Garrett Wilson does not need to get the ball in his hands to be an effective all 22 receiver. So like Ray's saying, the addition of Davante Adams, while it may steal some targets, hopefully opens things up for Garrett Wilson and makes him just the situation all around better. But I actually am more excited about the Amari Cooper trade than the Davante Adams trade, because I think realistically, the Bills are in a much better position to make a postseason run, right? And they've done that to this point with basically very little at the wide receiver position. And Amari Cooper, as much as I've been kind of grilling him all year for maybe underperforming, the last few years he's been the best he's ever been, right? And this is you know, the best quarterback potentially he's had in several years. I want to say ever, but I don't know if that's
easy,
technically
relax.
True, because he did play with Dak. I like Dak, but Josh Allen really is, you know, maybe top three quarterback in the NFL right now.
You could say that. You could say that about Allen.
Yeah. So I think it's fair, right? This is like ideal situation for Amari Cooper, but it's also ideal situation for Josh Allen, right? He needed a difference maker at receiver. They get rid of Stephon Diggs, and Amari Cooper might slot in there. And while he's kind of a little bit different style receiver, can maybe be even better in this offense. So I am ecstatic about seeing what Amari Cooper can do for Josh Allen and all around that Bills offense. And then obviously you're all 22 team.
Yeah. And Amari Cooper's done this before. He was traded mid season to the Cowboys a few years ago. Was it 2018 or 2019? I think it was 2018. traded midseason to the Cowboys, I think before week five, and, you know, after a week or so hit the ground running there and made a huge impact on their offense. So this isn't a new frontier for Amari Cooper either, headed to a new team in the middle of the season. And he gets away from whatever's going on over there with Deshaun Watson. Like, regardless of everything else off the field with him, even just on the field, I mean, this was a great player, and now he looks like the Monstars just took all of his superpowers away. And we just, strictly talking about the quarterback, we have no idea what happened to that guy, but he's not at all the same player he was 3-4 years ago. So for Amari Cooper to get away from that situation and to a quarterback as great as Josh Allen, and to have a great play caller over there as well in Brady. So I think overall it's another win for him. And again, the Bills offense was already humming. You have Dalton Kincaid, who can get some, you know, target hogs, if you will, and kind of open up in the middle of the field. But now you add Amari Cooper to that mix, and you have, you know, two threats on every play that, no matter what's called, can get open. They can move the sticks on 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. That's where Amari Cooper shines. And now he's just away from the shackles of Cleveland and Deshaun Watson. And he can, no pun, he can now just, I guess, you know, show us the player that we thought Cleveland was getting a couple of years ago before everything around him fell off a cliff.
Yeah, no diddy on that one for sure. Yeah. Let's jump into week six, talk about some of the performances, and we're just going to highlight a few. If you want to go see the complete list, head to our Twitter page at @all22_PFF, and you can see that whole list there. But let's just talk about a few, and I want to start off at quarterback because it was a big week. We talked about how a couple of rookie quarterbacks were getting their first start with Drake May and Spencer Rattler. They both performed pretty well, right? Like, I don't think either of them were lightning or, you know, like blew the top off of expectations, but they both played relatively well. Let's start with Rattler, who had a pretty good game, but all in all, right, it was kind of what we talked about and what we expected. There were flashes, there were big plays. He used his legs in a way that showed that he has athleticism, but there's still just kind of too much turnovers, too many risky plays. And, you know, it wasn't enough to help them win the game either, right? And I think at the end of the day, that's what the Saints really need, is a difference maker to help them win football games. And it wasn't him, right? I know they were in the running to get Davante Adams as well. And I wonder if losing that game with Carr still out, they said, that's too much of a big investment to make when we don't even, you know, we're 2-4 now.
Yeah, and the Saints, I mean, they're dealing with their own injuries, obviously not just at quarterback, but the offensive line. The situation is not as good as it was 3 weeks ago for anybody under center. I think all you wanted to see, or still do want to see, but I'm not sure you're going to quite get, is you want Spencer Rattler for the next 2-3 weeks, however long he has, to show you something that you can look for beyond this season. Let him show you something, that there's some potential there that you can look forward to in 2025 and 2026, post Derek Carr era. That didn't happen last week. And okay, you know, it's his first action, his first full game action. So that's fine. You don't want to, you know, crucify him for that. But I'm not sure you saw enough flashes and moving away from some of the drawbacks that we saw to his game in college, as far as being a bit turnover prone and putting the ball in harm's way at times. You wanted to see that limited a bit more than I think it was. So yeah, you're going to have to see him for however long he has. He's got to step up and be better than he was last week if you want to consider any sort of future for him as a starter in the NFL. And not sure it's off to the best of starts already tonight. It's obviously still early here, first quarter between Broncos and Saints. But yeah, you need to show something, and we're still waiting to see it. We're still waiting to see that star shine bright enough to consider something moving forward. We haven't seen it yet.
Right, but the real star of that weekend was Drake May, who had a bit better of a performance, and it wasn't great, right? It wasn't great, but it was a good performance. Let's just talk about again, right? That is probably the worst offensive line in football. Even their best offensive line weapon, they've moved all over that line. Michael Onwenu, and it just hasn't been great, right? It hasn't been great, but he threw for 243 yards, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions with a 60.7 offensive grade. He showed what he can do, right? He had a big time throw, but he still had 2 turnover-worthy plays. So definitely need to correct that balance. Average depth of target was really low, 5.8. And his time to throw was over 3 seconds, 3.07 seconds. I think he took 4 sacks. So again, this is like a really tough situation. So I'm not going to look into it too much and I'm not going to grill him too much, but he kept his poise, right? And when he needed to make a couple throws, even if they were routine touchdown passes, right, that anybody could have made, he still made them. He still ran the offense and he kept them competitive against a really difficult Houston defense. I liked what I saw against Drake May, and I'm definitely excited to see a little bit more.
Yeah, you can't get caught up in 3 touchdown passes because, yeah, that looks great on the stat sheet. It looks great on a standard fantasy football platform or something. But like you mentioned, that time to throw is high. And behind that offensive line, you don't have that time to throw. So that results in those sacks that you mentioned. And that's indicative of someone who's not yet comfortable in the NFL. And of course, I mean, he's a rookie, so you're going to expect that with not great weapons and such. And it's a tough defense he went against, and he's got tough defenses for the next 3 weeks. We talked about this, how me personally, I would have waited until that schedule softened up a little bit come November before throwing him out there. So the time to throw, he's going to have to be quicker with his decision-making while still not putting the ball in harm's way. You know, throwing the ball is not the only way to put the ball in harm's way. If you take too long in the pocket behind a subpar offensive line, you are putting the ball in harm's way by way of a fumble or potential fumbles when you take too many hits. So he's going to have to be quicker with his decision making. It was a good start, like you said. All in all, you know, all things considered, he kept his poise, and that's what you wanted to see. And he made the plays that were there that weren't being made before he took the field. So long term, very encouraging. You want to see it again, obviously, while still anticipating there's going to be bumps in the road. So don't freak out when there's a subpar performance over the next few weeks in that tough schedule, even if there's 2 of them. That's fine. You saw what you needed to see and what can be. It's just going to take some time to get there. So yeah, don't freak out positively over 3 touchdowns. Don't freak out over the difficulties that are yet to come, but be encouraged by the fact that he made the plays that were there in a bad situation and did provide a spark for that offense overall. So for all 22 users and managers, still a total hold on your bench. Don't start him unless you have to because of a bye week or injury. Keep him on the bench until, you know, next year the Patriots bring in some more young talent, kind of solidify things around him, and then we see him develop into the player we think he can be. I think that's the move here. So yeah, definite hold. Keep him on your bench, and you know, just be patient because I do think it's going to get there. He's shown some good things, but it's not quite there yet.
What happened in the Yankee game? I see you looking elsewhere. You're making me nervous.
Lady, that's it. They lost. It's 2-1. Yeah, walk off. Yeah, walk off. Is what it is, Chris. Now we get to watch a riveting Sunday night football game between the Saints and Broncos. Spencer Rattler, Bo Nix, baby.
I'm going to try not to be deflated here, guys. I'm going to keep it going. See, this is like when you have to be a professional. Is moments like right now.
Yeah, and you're not doing it right now.
I'm trying my best, okay?
You are way off course.
Zay Flowers is the next guy I wanted to talk about, right? Receiver for the Baltimore Ravens, keeping it cool, right? Zay Flowers, coolest dude out there. On the season, he's got 33 receptions for 400 yards, 1 touchdown, but his week-to-week PFF grade has been a bit sporadic, but I think it's going in the right direction. Week 1 was 60, 71 in week 2, 67.9 week 3, 53.5 in week 4, then week 5, it was an 80.6, and week 6, it was a 90.2. It's gone up little by little, and we're seeing that little progression along the way. And this Baltimore team is dynamic, and it's got a lot of different weapons. But Flowers is somebody that reminded me a lot of the late, great Antonio Brown. Sorry, everybody, to say it. But he has a lot of aspects about his game that remind me of the dynamicism that Brown had as a receiver. So what do you think about Flowers right now in that Baltimore offense and what he could be?
Yeah, I think it's interesting in the sense that it took Derrick Henry a couple weeks. Really, that Dallas game, he broke out, but everybody breaks out against Dallas. That's really not saying much. But then thereafter, you started to see vintage Derrick Henry over the last 3 to 4 weeks, and that's when you started to see the climb in performance from Zay Flowers as well. So I think that offense has always sort of gone through, obviously, Lamar Jackson with what his legs open up in the run game and then up the seam in the early days of Mark Andrews' career. And now what we're seeing here where it's not just Lamar Jackson's legs opening up things through the air anymore, but now it's the threat of Derrick Henry. And when he gets going downhill and defenses now have to account for really 2 game-breaking talents in the backfield before you consider anything that threatens the third level of your defense. And I think that's where now Zay Flowers Flowers is going to feast and take advantage of. So as long as Derrick Henry is humming and then Lamar Jackson is just Lamar Jackson, he is who he is and he's going to be that guy, then yeah, Zay Flowers is going to be in advantageous situations every single week. And so it's almost a layup for him to take advantage of it. So yeah, as long as that running game is humming, Zay Flowers is going to be the biggest beneficiary of that.
Cool. And then going to some of the offensive linemen, because there are a couple names on here, right, that I want to just shout out. Trent Williams, Hall of Fame, first ballot, is what, 40 years old at this point, almost 40 years old. Season leader in PFF grade for an offensive tackle on the season, 89.5. Guard, we talk about Quentin Nelson all the time. He is back, dude. He is finally back. 87.3, leader of the season at guard. And then Creed Humphrey, again, like we're just talking about the greats here. 93.7, season leader at center. It's a great group. I'm really excited about it. But let's not talk about the best guys. I want to talk about a guy that's actually very concerning to me. And it's actually two guys, but it's both of the tackles for the Cincinnati Bengals at this point. And specifically, the one I have written down here is Orlando Brown Jr. with a 60.8 grade. But it really is both of them. It's him. It's Amarius Mims. They look like train wrecks. And when you're watching Joe Burrow and what he's been trying to do for that offense, I'm sure all of you Joe Burrow owners out there are just banging your head against the wall every week because he's doing a lot. There's a lot on that man's shoulders, and he's trying his hardest. And Orlando Brown and Amarius Mims look like they're just a door opening and closing every snap, letting guys rush through, constantly under pressure. And those are guys that I'm sure a lot of people are depending on either to be the future of their position or to be the current guy. How do you deal with having Orlando Brown Jr. or Amarius Mims on your team right now?
The frustrating one is Orlando Brown Jr. because you weren't expecting Amarius Mims to have a big role here. And he started, what, 8 games in college. So he was always a project. He has arguably the greatest frame ever for an offensive tackle, and that's great. But started 8 games in college and also had quite a few too many injuries considering the lack of playing time that he had in college. So that's always an overarching concern with Amarius Mims, even if he gets toward his ceiling from a pure talent perspective. But yeah, this is why the Bengals lost some games they shouldn't. It's not Joe Burrow. It's what's been around him. So for Amarius Mims, you just got to be patient. And it's hard to be patient when it's an offensive tackle and the result of those growing pains are hits to your quarterback or rush plays or potential big plays that are not had because of a lack of quality protection and a lack of a good pocket for your quarterback to deliver from. But that's just one of those deals where, hey, it's the NFL, injuries happen. You have a young guy, he just has to get through it. The only thing that can fix it is time, with the caveat that, again, he's not leaning on bad habits in order to survive out there, because that can cause some long-term issues for a player like Amarius Mims, which is the concern. But my counter to that is the guy played 8 games in college or started 8 games in college. He doesn't really have many bad habits at all. He doesn't have any habits, really. He's just a complete ball of clay. And the Bengals had 2 6'7", 6'8" offensive tackles to start the year that, you know, share the same similar type of frame to Amarius Mims. It was a great situation for him to walk into. But now that he's thrust into the lineup, yeah, it's just sink or swim. And he's, you know, he's kind of barely swimming, I guess. Yeah, it's just one of those things you just have to deal with. Orlando Brown Jr. kind of always been a bit inconsistent through his career. It's just that the high highs kind of overshadowed a lot of the low lows from a player like that. So yeah, he was always, the end result was always a consistently top 25-ish tackle in the league. But week to week, he wasn't always the most consistent player. And we're seeing that play out here. Started off okay, had a decent game against Carolina, obviously, and then 2 clunkers between the Ravens and the Giants. So he has to get back on track. There's no doubt about it. You want to be paid as a franchise tackle, you got to perform like one, and he hasn't yet. So for Amarius Mims, it's time. For Orlando Brown, it's just, dude, you gotta do what we paid you to do. There's really no way out for the Bengals. They just got to ride through it.
Well, that's what I wanted to talk about, right? All 22 is a team building game. And I think if I'm the GM of the Bengals right now, I'm kind of looking at my head coach and I'm saying, what's going on, right? Like, they've spent money in ways that they never have before. You know, at one point they had the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. They paid some offensive linemen. They paid receivers. They paid An edge rusher, and they didn't pay receivers, but they have two of the best receivers, right? I think the GM has done a good job putting the talent there. And when you look at the other teams that have quarterbacks that we put in the same conversation as Joe Burrow, those teams don't lose 5, 6, 7, 8 games, to start a season. We talk about him being a top three quarterback pretty consistently, right? Like with Joe Burrow, Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, we usually have that conversation about who, those are the top three. Patrick Mahomes never gets into situations like this. Josh Allen very rarely gets into situations like this. And I talked about how I don't really buy into Zach Taylor and what he's brought to this team. And, I think he did a great job a few years ago when they went to the Super Bowl, kind of stealing, plays from colleges when you'd see a great play on ESPN and a few weeks later, Zach Taylor worked it into their team. I think that's a great way to do things, but you need to be inventive and you need to stay current. You also need to know how to develop players. And there's one thing about the Chiefs and there's one thing about the Bills. Those offensive lines are never bad, right? They might not be the best, but they're never bad. Defenses are always strong, right? So why aren't the Bengals figuring it out? And now the Bengals GM is in a really difficult situation because he now has to decide, do we keep T. Higgins? Do we try to sign him to a long-term extension? Or do we try to flip him either for that offensive tackle that can fix this thing or for the draft picks for us to then go and replace either T. Higgins or the offensive tackle? And I think it puts them in a really difficult position because I don't think they need to be. I think they have the pieces on that team to be successful now. And honestly, I do think it's falling on Zach Taylor to figure it out.
Yeah, but look at the bright side. This is still way better than Jonah Williams. So, I mean, that's a positive. Like, you're going in the right direction when that's your starting point. Yeah, no, it is. Yes, it is. Let's not go there. Okay. As a Jonah Williams
drafter
who didn't really like him, but yeah.
Yeah.
So you got that to look forward to. And
I think that's the GM.
It is. And even in their Super Bowl run, I mean, they made it there relatively in spite of their pass protection. Right. And so they're just going to have to do it again. So this is nothing new for Joe Burrow, but maybe this is why Joe Burrow is still banged up and he's flexing his hand and his wrist and his forearm and everything else before games now. And you obviously don't want to see your quarterback breaking down. So I agree. It's something they got to fix here, but it's not something they're not used to. So they got to go out there and just, yeah, that's it. It's week 7. There aren't many, lifelines to pull out here, or levers to pull. There's no lifeboat coming, to save you. You got to swim to shore at this point. So,
yeah,
just do it.
It's a long season. Let's jump to the defensive side of the ball. And I wanted to shout out your boy Travis Jones again with another great performance, 83.7. Edge rusher, we talked about Aiden Hutchinson and the great performance he was putting on before the injury. But Will Anderson also, just 91.2, showing out again. And Chase Young on the other end has really struggled this year, 47.9 grade this week. I think it's been a lot of 50s throughout the year. So definitely concerning there for Chase Young. I think at this point, might be time to cut bait with the Chase Young. Linebackers, it's still the Fred Warner show. He's still the season leader, 92.6. But I want to talk about what's going on with Roquan Smith, and I don't really know the answer, but 43.2 grade this week, and it's been a lot of bad. I don't have the numbers in front of me at this moment, but it really has been a lot of bad. We talked about the other guy, Patrick Queen, leaving that team and how Roquan Smith kind of held him up, right? It made him worthwhile almost at a certain point. But what's happening now with Roquan Smith? I know we have to dig into the All-22 tape. I don't know if we have the answers in front of us at the moment, but I think it's something we need to figure out.
I think the easy answer when it comes to something like this is just because linebacker. I think that's really all it comes down to, is that linebackers are under attack, and this is just part of the variability for pretty much everybody who's not named Fred Warner at the position, even someone as good as Roquan Smith. It's just one of those deals where it just comes with the territory. And this is why I think the strategy that we see a bit more often here is just, you'll see 7 or 8 linebackers on one All-22 roster, for example, because you might just have to play matchup dependent football at this position each and every time. Because when a linebacker goes up against the Buffalo Bills in week 4, no matter how good you are, that's a tough offense. You have a mobile quarterback that just kind of really puts you in conflict, stretches you thin, and that's tough to overcome, right? His worst games were against the Chiefs and the Bills and the Washington Commanders. So you have Pat Mahomes Josh Allen, and then a mobile quarterback and rookie phenom in Jaden Daniels. Those were two or three, you know, really poor performances that really bring down what otherwise are three quality performances against the Las Vegas Raiders, the Dallas Cowboys, and the aforementioned Cincinnati Bengals and their weak offensive line. So I think it's just a matter of some really tough matchups at a really tough position, and linebackers are going to bear the brunt of the conflict when great offenses go up against that defense. It just is what it is. Linebackers are the most vulnerable. They're the most under attack based on the style of offenses in the NFL today. And so unless they're exceptional, sometimes they're going to suffer when they play tough opponents. So I think it's really just a story of matchups, and it's something that tells you, hey, unless it's the very best of the best, like a Fred Warner, just go matchup dependent for linebacker in all 22. I think that's your best bet.
Yeah, I'm in agreement there. Cornerback situation is a little funky this year, and we talk about that. It's another position that's absolutely wild to watch. Zion McCollum is still the highest rated in the NFL, 89.4. I know Ray's still not bought in, but I'm bought in. This guy's playing his heart out. Andrew Phillips, though, I wanted to see if you had any notes on him. 80.7 grade again. He's been phenomenal. We've seen his name every week. We've been posting his highlights. He's been doing a lot of really good things. Tell me about this guy.
Yeah, so cornerback from Kentucky, a third round rookie pick, right? It's turning out to be a really good selection for the New York Giants. Kind of the prototype there, right? 6 foot, just about 190 pounds. Just kind of the cookie cutter, what you want to see from a cornerback who's just a flat out good player. And considering the upgrades that the Giants made up front on that defense, obviously there's struggles elsewhere on that team. That roster is still flawed. But when you consider their defensive line, that defensive front, we're seeing the corners and someone like Andrew Phillips really benefit from the pressure that they put on opposing quarterbacks, not just from the edges with Kayvon and Brian Burns, although we'll see how the sort of injuries shake out there on that front, on the edges there, but then also obviously Dexter Lawrence, we've talked about him enough and the pressure that he brings from the interior. So I think all that together, and you have just a solid player who's going to stick with receivers and be in the right spots, they're going to benefit from that. And that's what Andrew Phillips is as a rookie third round pick. We talked about this rookie cornerback class of not having a Patrick Surtain up top or Derek Stingley or a Sauce Gardner, the no brainer top 10 talent, but it being very deep between the, you know, 25th through 60th overall players. Drew Phillips taking 70th overall. He's better than that and was better than that. And he falls into that bucket of really talented day two type of talents. And he just fell into a good situation and he's making the most of it. So again, you want to help out your corners, have a strong defensive front, and a player like Drew Phillips will take advantage of it. And he's doing a good job of that.
Last guy I wanted to talk about tonight is safety Brian Branch, who has been absolutely phenomenal. And I think calling him a safety is a little bit strange to do, right? Yes, that is where he's listed in the system currently, but this is a guy that right now has 72 snaps as a box safety, 90 as a free safety. He's in the slot on 55 snaps. He's been an outside corner on 11 snaps. He's played boundary corner on 5 snaps. He's played everywhere, and he's done a phenomenal job in coverage. He has a 76 coverage grade last year, 81.4 coverage grade this year. This is now becoming one of those household names where, again, every week we're pumping out these highlights of Brian Branch because he's dynamic and he's doing all of the things you ask a dynamic defensive weapon to do, right? He's playing all over the place. It's been phenomenal for Brian Branch. The other guy on the Packers, right, Xavier McKinney, is the season leader with a 90.5. But how about Evan Williams, the other rookie safety not named Bullard from Georgia, with a 93.3 grade last week, and he's also on the rise. They've been playing a three safety set at times. They have 70 snaps or above each week to week. So it's pretty crazy that you're seeing three safeties in the Packer systems getting legitimately 70 snaps a week and grading extremely well. And that just goes to show you, you know, we talk about it at running back or receiver. You know, these teams are getting better at using the weapons the way they're meant to be used, right? To their skill set. How about at safety, which is a really difficult position to play, where you can get three guys that all have kind of slightly different skill sets and just maximize what they do, right? By placing them in the right position to be successful. I think the Packers are doing a great job of that. And it kind of goes to show with the record that they have this year, you know, this is a really young team, but they're staying afloat and they're staying competitive in what is the best division in football right now.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is we've seen versatile players come into the league in recent years, and we've been, not that we've been concerned with, but we've seen NFL teams not use them to their potential, move them around too much, and they just never get comfortable, whether it's like an Isaiah Simmons, for example, where this guy's so big, he's so fast, you could line him up anywhere. And then you do line him up anywhere, but then they don't actually consistently line up anywhere. And then they don't ever get comfortable. The Lions seem to have really cracked the code and figured it out with Brian Branch, who's another versatile player, safety, big nickel, can come up against the run, solid in coverage, just a really sound football player. So they've sort of figured it out without sort of putting too much on his plate or really sort of messing with what works. So again, kudos to them for figuring it out and not getting too cute and just ruining a good thing. So they've played that perfectly. They've threaded that needle. Evan Williams, you know, you hit on it. I think I'd like to see the front seven of the Packers be as consistent as we've seen their safeties be this year. So, you know, again, fourth round rookie, three very good games in a row here. He's had a really good month of October. You kind of want to see it just to make sure it's not a flash in the pan moving forward. But yeah, that's a name to keep an eye on. And again, given the scarcity of good safeties in the league today, it's probably someone you want to pick up in an all 22 league quickly, because What's the risk, right? You hold him for 3 weeks and it turns out to be a flash in the pan, then that's fine. You drop him and, you know, you just kind of have that constant bottom of the roster churn unless you hit on a guy like that and now you have a long-term answer. So I think it's perfectly sound. You're not jumping the gun too early by picking up someone like Evan Williams and just seeing how things play out.
Amen. All right, everyone, go enjoy. You got Denver, New Orleans playing right now. It's 13-0 Denver. Was a little bit of snore fest, but it looks like it's picking up some steam. Javonte Williams got a touchdown in there. If you haven't yet, give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and TikTok at all22_PFF. Give us a review wherever you watch or listen to your podcast. If you're watching right now, go ahead and drop a review. Give us a little thumbs up. It really helps us out and gets us some more views. So appreciate everybody again tuning in. Have a great night. I'm a ghost.